Hi, I'm Michelle Grace Hoddle, architect, and I've never met a woman architect before. I'm here with Bob Habian of TECT. And Bob, could you tell me a little bit about yourself?
You bet. My name is Bob Habian. I'm an architect. I'm a manufacturer in the past, in a past life. And I like to say that I'm a licensed problem solver, puzzle builder as well. A lot of folks are like, what does that mean? I think it's
What
just
does it
one way to
mean?
describe a licensed architect, right?
Yeah,
We are problem
exactly.
solvers. We are puzzle builders. There are a lot of parts and pieces that fit interestingly, and if you can do it well, you're kind of a puzzle builder, right? And we're always solving problems. So I would say I prefer those terms to what might more practically be described as architect entrepreneur.
And could you tell me a little bit about tech?
Yes. So having been a manufacturer and having been now an architect for almost 30 years, I believe this is my 30th year. Tech is the result of 30 years of experience in the difficulty between manufacturers and design professionals to do business together in a smooth and enjoyable way. It's not that easy.
No.
And I think most of us suffer on both sides. And so TECT is the distillation of best practices over 30 years put into kind of a suite of services and tools that I found were necessary. Easy question, complicated answer, and even I'm still trying to find a better way to describe it. Because so often people say, oh, are you a startup? Not really. Startup that started 30 years ago, sure. Are you an app? Not really. Are you like this company or like that company? No, not really. I would say if any of those were the solution, then there wouldn't still be the problem to solve. So we're solving the things that were yet to be solved. And that includes how we find each other between supply and demand, how we find each other by location, geography, so many things we could talk about a bit more perhaps that just weren't yet being solved. So I'll leave you with that mystery for a minute and we can fill in the blanks a little bit later.
So, I have my four questions that I typically ask people for my podcast. And the first one is, what are your recollections? What are your first recollections of experiencing architecture?
Okay. I'm going to say I was maybe 5 years old, maybe six, living in Redwood City, California, in the backyard with my brother, who was adventuresome and adventurous. And we would climb up on our back patio cover and jump. So my experience with architecture was
Like
trying
a
to
lot of
fly,
boys, yeah,
right?
yeah.
And learning why we aren't supposed to the hard way. That's my first recollection.
Okay, so what are three classic buildings that you like and why? And they don't have to be classical, they're
Well,
like
I mean, classic to
classic,
me.
yeah.
I
Yeah,
mean, if you want to
classic
get
to you.
inside my head, my classics are okay. If you've ever seen the movie, The Secret of Roan Inish,
Yes.
okay,
Yeah.
that would be my quintessential piece of architecture.
Okay.
A little remote, hand-built stone cottage that hand-hewn to the core, safe shelter, substantial, and just so of the earth and of the culture and of the time and of the user. I love it. I love the simplicity, the permanence, and a bit of the mystery.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, I don't think this type of building was created 5 years ago. Okay.
But it's timelessness in a way. We're
Absolutely.
timeless. Yeah.
So that'd be one. Staying in the UK theme, a classic pub. A classic pub. Why? I don't know. I'll take one anywhere in the world. And I know what I'm getting and I love it. It's a place that has a soul, that has an attitude, that engages me and others, and it's moment by moment changing, right? Music one night, laughter the other, sadness the other, stories. Mm-hmm. I love a great pub. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I'm a good customer in a pub. I don't drink a lot, and I don't like beer very much. But I sure love a pub.
I think that's all whiskey, too.
You can show you know, I've been known to enjoy a dram, a wee dram. Yeah. Third, you know, I don't know what's with the indigenous here, but I was at a home show. Mm-hmm. You know, the classic regional home show. Everything from, you know, popcorn to all the stuff you'd see at a home
yeah,
show.
Yeah, AstroTurf.
AstroTurf. Probably could buy some luggage at that show yeah. as well if you wanted. But
A spa.
Yeah. Oh, no really shortage spa. Of spas. Yeah. And somehow they're always on sale right then. It's like, how do you guys sell? Oh, we only sell at home shows. So all year long, the only time it's available is at this home show. But next week, we're selling that home show. What is this? Anyway. But I was at this home show in Auburn, California, and there was this majestic, like authentic teepee mm-hmm. from a company that's making them, like real deal stuff. Oh, so cool.
Yeah.
So I've got a hillside property, and I could see that 30-foot tall teepee fitting beautifully.
So how big in diameter was it?
I'm going to say 20 feet.
Uh-huh.
25. Big, beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Tall. Ribbon flags flying off of the top, you know, whatever you call the sticks uh-huh. and, you know, the branches that hold the teepee. I'm sure there's a formal name. I'm no expert. I'm just intrigued. But boy, do I have ideas of how cool that is and how cool it could be, how simple it is.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you don't need to go to the building department about it or anything.
And guess what? If I want to change my view, what do they call it? Just let's rotate? Is that what you do? Hey, honey, let's rotate. Okay, new view. But if you just wanted to leave town and start up somewhere else, you literally it folds up and off you go.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm a sucker for old cool things like that. I love it.
Yeah. No, did you ever go to that place in Arizona where they have all the fake teepees?
See if like there is that place.
Of Winslow,
and if somebody flew me there in a Learjet and drove me in their beautiful, I wouldn't go. You said fake? What'd you say?
They're fake. They're fake, like stucco teepees. And my parents actually stayed there one time. And I just looked at them and I'm like, I just know that the smell would be horrible. Oh my God. I just know it. And they have little air conditioning units like stuck into the side in the back.
Blessed or cursed.
I'll send it to you. I'll post it in the blog when I do the blog. Yeah.
Perfect. Blessed or cursed. I had a fantastic professor in college. I'll say his name. Can I say his name?
Yeah.
You can say Randy Detmer.
Uh-huh.
He's an architect's architect, but he's also a builder, contractor. And I forget the exact words, but you knew that if I ever designed anything with fake materials, he would knock on my door about 20 seconds after I made that decision and be like, excuse me. Like, yeah, a styrofoam beam on your ceiling is like unacceptable. You were a student of Randy Detmer. This is not okay. Truth in materials, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Why not? You know. So to me, it's fascinating that we would actually fake things
mm-hmm.
without worrying about what the actual materials should be doing and what they're about,
mm-hmm.
you know? So for me, very interesting.
Yeah.
I don't like fake.
Yeah. No, I don't like fake either. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just one of those things, though, that, I mean, sometimes they're like, okay, should we have something fake because we can't afford the real thing, or should we just have nothing at all?
Well, like see, now you remind me of something that I did see that was essentially fake that I would buy into. And even if Randy knocked on my door, I think he might see the light in this one. And I would say within the last 5 years, I was talking to somebody about this, and they showed me in a project how it was just more practical to use, I think it might have been a shaped metal panel finished to look like cast in place concrete.
Hmm.
Because of this particular configuration in this architecture where poured in place concrete would not be okay. It'd be way too overkill. It was just an interior feature to finish off some significant structure that was literally there.
Yeah.
But it was finished well, and it made a lot of sense. I got to say, it made a lot of sense to mimic the real stuff that it was adjacent to.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget if it was kind of a combination of constructability and maybe access. Like, oh, we needed to actually, where you couldn't do it the full way.
Yeah.
But there was real logic to it, at least.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, hey, let's fake concrete on a project.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, here's something that can actually execute maybe our design vision a little better or more cleanly. And some great products that you can do it with. Actually, one of our clients, Isaiah Industries.
Okay.
They make specialty metal roofing. But get this. They can emulate terracotta, like believable terracotta in metal panel.
Yeah.
That's a feat.
Yeah. And I mean, like I'll use like LP siding and Hardy siding, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like because wood products are so incredibly expensive, but then also because of the fire rating, if you need a higher fire rating.
I feel
rating,
like you're right? like setting these questions up for me. I'll tell you why. Okay, we have another client.
Okay.
Tan Timber.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When we think about wood products, we think about exactly what you said, right? So fire, rot, just immature wood that's twisty and all of that, right? But there are manufacturers out there that are solving those fundamental problems. So kind of like who knew that a metal panel roof could look like terracotta on a historic building?
Yeah.
And who knew that you could have wood without the downside of wood?
Mm-hmm.
So Tan Timber, fascinating. They're kind of somewhere between a kiln-dried lumber and shoshugiban.
Yeah.
So somewhere it's gotten some heat treatment, but not charcoal.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so they use heat to warm this wood up well beyond kiln-dried. They start with kiln-dried, actually. Mm-hmm. And then they increase the heat and steam, and they kind of bake out the bad stuff and bake in the benefits. Now, that wood can be used on the exterior without the vulnerabilities of wood.
Yeah.
Not through a finish, just through a natural process.
Yeah.
Of dealing with the physics of the material.
Yes.
Is that fake wood? No, it's real wood.
Mm-hmm.
Is it thoughtfully altered? Yeah. I mean, that starts to get interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's a lighter product. It typically is lighter.
Durable, lighter, exotic. Yeah. I think it kind of gives the designer latitude to do things with treated products like that.
Yeah.
Heat treated products. They use a term called thermo wood. And it gives a designer more options than if you used conventional lumber that has the vulnerability.
Yeah.
So anyway, interesting, little sideline there on materials.
Segue. Yeah.
How it relates to design.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's an ever changing, range of products and innovations and thoughtfulness. And boy, here at this show, I'm needing to get out and see it because it's here. Have you seen some cool things already?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I always see some great things. And then I'm talking about the symposium in the fall. And so I'm asking some other people because, we always have a ton of window manufacturers that want to be at the CRAN symposium. And, it's like, everybody's like, okay, well, we always have window manufacturers, so we're like looking at other things. So of course they have their little pin out, but, Big Ass Fans is over there. And then I asked them, I said, do you want to come? It's like, why don't you contact? And they said, oh yeah, it's great. I said, so everybody around here knows about, Big Ass Fans, but except for one of our friends that's just from Europe, and we were kind of like laughing about Big Ass Fans, and I don't know whether she was like really kind of, she wasn't, I said, it's American humor.
Right? So again, we didn't talk about any of this, did we? This is just a cold conversation.
No, it's a total cold conversation.
So now you're talking about a third client of ours.
Okay.
Just in this one conversation. This is not promotional. This is, just happens to be the case. Have you heard of VASK? VAASK.
I have. Yes.
How did you hear of VASK? I don't know.
I don't know.
Have you heard of Big Ass Fans?
Yes.
Okay. So the creators of Big Ass Fans.
Uh-huh.
Fans. have a number of other companies that they've grown and matured and launched.
Yeah.
One of which is Vask.
Okay.
I can't see the reference back to Big Ass Fans myself. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, how would I know?
Yeah.
So we're talking to Vask about what we do and about what they do. And I'll share this because I think it's funny and it may end up being branded this way. But on that first call, I just popped over to GoDaddy. And I bought the domain name. So what Vask does, I'll show you. What Vask does is they make a hand sanitizing system.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of in-wall, elegant, beautiful for your hands.
Mm-hmm.
So the domain I bought on that first call. I mean, if you make Big Ass Fans, then you should call that Clean Ass Hands. CleanAssHands.com. And then I told him, I said, hey, I just bought cleanasshands.com. I'll give it to you. No markup. I just thought it should be security. That I would be able to equate and say it must be part of the family company. Makes sense to me. Anyway, Vask, another client that makes a fantastic product that came from a Big Ass Fan lineage.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And some Beast of Burden lineage in the family.
And they have cute pins.
Cute pins.
They've got the pins.
Cute
with
little squishy donkeys.
Squishy little donkeys.
It's always pleasant when you're in there.
I didn't get the donkey because I'm trying to get, like, take home as little as possible, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Extra luggage required. Yeah. But, I mean, take that, for example, right? Vask, innovating on hand sanitizing. How many of us have gotten hand sanitizer from a little plastic bottle sitting on a little feeble stand with drips on the floor? A messy little spot.
Now we now have to touch the thing in order to push it in to get to sanitize our hands. Yeah.
So let's sanitize our hands in a touchless, permanent, thoughtful. I think it even has intelligence in the machine to know when we're running low. Signal through IP addresses and such. Maintenance. Crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I'm so excited about the future of our industry. And products and where that's going. It's super cool.
Anyway, So, so what do you like about being an architect, and or what do you like about helping architects or the architecture industry? And it's like you have, you know, I mean, I like to think that like architects are still, you know, people say, well, that's not the traditional practice. And I said, what is traditional practice anymore?
Anymore?
I mean,
yeah,
there really isn't traditional practice in the way. I mean, even, you know, someone that, that manages a huge architecture firm, I mean, are they in the traditional practice? Because they probably don't, you know, they haven't designed anything. They haven't, you know, it's like they're not kind of like the Frank Lloyd Wright of, you know, of today. So, so, you know, the architecture practice can be a big range. You know, an architect can be a big range of,
Yeah, I think going back to this idea or notion of a licensed problem solver or a licensed puzzle builder, I really believe every architect is better described that way. I think that we're all qualified to solve just about anything. But for some reason, we have this notion that we should only apply those skills to the building industry. And that most of us should just try to do new projects. Like, isn't that kind of our path as a community most of the time? What do you do? You're an architect? Oh, you must do buildings. What kind of buildings? How many of us say, oh, you know what I love to do is like this nondescript little upgrade to a building that nobody can fully appreciate. But it helps add another 50 years to the life of the building. Like, really? Is that you? Is that what you do? Is that what you're your boat? We need it. But so the idea that as architects, we're taught to solve problems that are complex, that sometimes impact money, schedule, aesthetics, require a whole team of people. I have found in my career that I could, for instance, walk into a boardroom of, let's say, a very left-brained industry, finance, medicine. You walk into a boardroom in a hospital that's just a lot of doctors, let's say. Not a lot of creativity in that room by design. Analytical, brilliant, scientific, measured, right? Creative? No. But guess who they need in their next boardroom meeting? To just sit and listen. What's the problem they're trying to solve? What are their resources? What's their schedule? What's their goal? Who do they have to work with? Most architects could give them insight in 15 minutes after listening. that they would never come up with themselves.
Exactly.
And we're not talking about designing buildings.
No, no.
I'm talking about they might have been trying to solve a scheduling problem.
Yeah.
And they're all so non-creative by design, mm-hmm. but they're brilliant at what they do. And then you kind of go, well, wouldn't you just want to two parts this, one part that, and then tie it in a four-way knot? And they're going, oh, now we see it.
Yeah.
Because they can see things they can't think of it.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, the value to impact those industries.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had the good fortune to help companies on Wall Street and others that literally, that was my experience. I just sat, listened, and went, oh, I think I see an answer.
Yeah.
And I think most of my peers would have been able to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So I love being a problem solver and mm-hmm. love being a people person.
And you know, so much they'll say like, oh, you know, I mean, you'll hear the news and they'll say, oh, the architect of the policy. And that person is not an architect, but they're the person that came up with that. So they're using,
I think
they're
it's the more origin than
happy.
Story.
Yeah. They're more than happy to say the architect of that policy or something. But yeah.
I was in Paris and was fascinated when I looked up at the large buildings in the heart of the city. You'll see two names on a big building. Entrepreneur, architect. On the sides of the building, that's what they used to do. And the entrepreneur was the one that put the project together. We call them developers, mm-hmm. basically. But when you think about it, if you had an entrepreneur with a vision and a budget, and an architect that could solve problems,
mm-hmm.
look at the work they've produced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it used to be done. The architect of the document, the this, the that. Because the role was the person that was needing to help coordinate the whole deal on behalf of, to the benefit of everybody else,
mm-hmm.
that was able to just handle all that untold variable and come up with a solution.
Mm-hmm.
I love that about what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't believe it's only limited to buildings and particularly new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it is fascinating to meet so many of my peers, like at a show like this, and know that everyone I'm speaking with, I can kind of sense that they want to do more than they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of monetizing the value a bit to say, you know what? The world is paying like 4x our billing rate for lesser services in other industries.
Mm-hmm.
We should occasionally show up and join the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Without credentials in their industry, we have more credentials than the most credentialed.
Exactly.
In some of these industries, ironically.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then that kind of parlays into what would you like to say about the future of architecture?
I'm so excited. I'm seriously looking forward to the best stage of the industry I'm going to experience in my life.
Okay.
I think it's headed in that direction.
Yeah.
I think post-COVID, there was a wholesale shift in how we do things.
Mm-hmm.
And a change was needed, but nobody likes change. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. Why don't we just stop doing things that don't work?
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, I believe this to be true. If in our industry and in our practice, we simply stop doing the things that don't work,
mm-hmm.
we're then about to enter the best chapter in the history of our industry.
Yeah.
Think about it. We don't need to achieve rocket science innovation. No, let's just stop doing things that don't work.
Yeah.
And if we can all agree and really commit, you know how somebody says, oh, I could do that for 30 days. I can't do it for 4 days, if we're being honest. But if we could get the kind of commitment where everyone's like, okay, that's it. I'm going to stop doing what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd like sit down and write down some of the things that, what does that mean? Oh, that means a lot of things.
Because mm-hmm.
we're doing so many things that don't work.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah, we just keep doing them because like, oh, it's the way it's always been done. It's like, yeah, and it didn't work. It didn't work 20 years ago either.
This is so fundamental amongst humans. It's like, so let's change the equation. So let's tackle the problem from another vantage point. But clearly, let's stop doing things that don't work. And then we have to fill that void with, okay, then what?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, I'm seeing the then what is that suddenly, if we stop doing things that don't work, and we do nothing else for a minute, we just pause and look around, we go, oh, we're making progress.
Mm-hmm.
Without doing anything. So it's kind of like stop to get ahead. It's an interesting dynamic. Anyway, I'm so excited about the future. But one other aspect of that is generations, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I was in school, CAD was just kind of becoming a thing.
Yeah, I learned CAD on AutoCAD version 1.
And I looked at it and I went, nope, not interesting. Exactly. I'm a hand-drawn guy. I love the patina and the art and the craft. And I was like, I'm not that guy.
And I
don't
do
mind hiring
faster,
a guy.
Right? Yeah,
and I'm enamored by those that are built that way. But that and like coding class, oh my God. Somehow I got an A+ in logic, and I don't think I would ever pass a coding class. It's just structured kind of logic, right? Can't do it. So I don't know. I lost my train of thought there, I think. But what was the question again?
Oh, about things that didn't work before. Yeah, things that didn't work.
I lost myself on my own.
Things that don't work and that generations.
Thank you.
Yeah, generations.
Now the ecosystem up here above my neck is interior thunderstorms at sometimes.
You're going to let you.
I'm trying to hold it all together.
Yeah, Bob's running his booth and we're podcasting from A23.
Yeah. Booth number 4201. If you're
4201,
here, great. If we're over with before the podcast goes live, don't look for us. We're not here. Save yourself some time.
I could probably post it tonight, actually, or tomorrow morning.
That'd be
fun. Yeah. Yeah.
So here's the point I was attempting to make. The next generation, right? So in our generation, in my generation, CAD was a thing at that time. I was also blessed to be meeting Joe Eschrich. I did some stuff with him and some other sage architects, right?
Yeah.
That were just the real deal of their era, done a certain way, where materials mattered, physics mattered.
Yeah.
This is reality, right? Goody Steinberg, some other just like great folks. Anyway, I felt like we were so lucky. To get that exposure while this tech thing was happening and coming in representing a whole new way of life. And I feel like we were stuck in the, we get a booth break. Everyone knows a good bio break. This is what we call a booth break.
Alex is That's the awesome. Publisher of Architectural Record just walked by. So hey, we had said,
if you don't pay props
Alex
to Alex,
back we had
if you don't pay your props to Alex, you may not be either getting that issue or ever in it again. That's it. You're out. You're out, Jerry, like a good Seinfeld. But I feel like I grew up in that wonderful between future technology and the sage old stuff. I think the last few generations were kind of mostly tech. And really beginning to lose touch with the historic legacy of the people that we kind of got to witness coming up. But fast forward to the future, I think that tech has now settled back into its pendulum swing of like tech for what and how do we leverage it. And I think the future generations are thoughtful, talented, problem-solving, optimistic. They understand we're not just talking about a few little things. They're in every industry now. They're really... We're expanding. We're landing. It's good. It's good. We're growing. So the future of our practice in the hands of the future generations, I think is very bright. We're blessed to be working with the AIAS nationally. And we've got students here at this show today working with us.
Yeah.
Why?
Which is great.
Yeah. And you know, when it comes to products and projects and design professionals, what we tell students, future practitioners, frankly, our peers already, is if I could tell you something to do differently than I did when I was coming up, don't try to learn about all the products. You'll never do it. Too much to learn. But if you could build your own network of people behind the products that could help you, and you could be a design professional that brings that expertise to your team early to make a better decision, imagine like a two-year-old design firm that brings in 30 product experts on their first project. Right? And lets the brick expert from Glengarry sit at the table and advise on the project. Or Niagara Toilets are advising. You know what I mean? But I'm just a new firm doing our first project. Yeah, but you're doing it in a way that probably a handful of firms have ever done that well because they didn't leverage the knowledge and experience and wisdom of the real people. And so we're in those discussions and we're seeing those things and I'm excited about where it's going. Really cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, would you like to say anything else?
I've said so much.
No.
I'm running out of words left in my word bank. It's like, really? I still have fuel left in the tank? Cool. More words? One of my practices I'm trying to really work on is say less. Mm-hmm. But when I'm a guest on a podcast, I can't say nothing.
No, you
doesn't
can't.
Make for
no,
a good podcast.
Can't. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm trying to be, you know, verbose, but within the limits. But
oh yeah, you know? No, you're doing a great job.
And
yeah.
And this orange is just overwhelming. I'm sitting on an orange carpet in an orange chair with an orange
spoon there. We've got a like, lot of what? Orange.
But I guess we kind of set ourselves up for this moment. And but anyway, do I have anything else to say? You know, I really believe in the power of people. Mm-hmm. I believe we're intentionally diverse,
yes,
uniquely made, mm-hmm, and that we have our best days, our best projects, our best times, our best communities in a way that requires one thing. We'll be done in the final statement. Here yeah. we go, Your Honor. My closing argument, Your Honor, is this. I think the key to actually pulling it off where we're all heard and we're all valued, mm-hmm, and we're all contributing, mm-hmm, I think the one thing that's keeping us all from doing that is individual fear. Individual fear, mm-hmm, personally. So if we can lose the fear and just show up as who we are, which sometimes is difficult.
Yeah.
To be our authentic self.
Yeah.
Feel
yeah.
vulnerable.
Yeah.
But just like if we can all agree to stop doing things that don't work, can we all agree to show up as we are? I have two daughters. Here's a famous rule, right? If you're worried about what you're wearing when you go to the party, nobody else is worrying about what you're wearing. They're all worried about what they're wearing. Yeah. Nobody is worried about what you're wearing. Same concept. Lose the fear. Show up fully. Mm-hmm. And we will have a whole new future.
Exactly.
The only thing holding it back is ourselves.
Yeah.
So just unleash, show up, and it's all good.
Yeah.
That's my final.
Yeah. Just be
my
yourself.
My closing argument.
Yeah.
Your
just be yourself.
Okay. With that, I rest.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Oh, thank
Evan,
you,
Evan needs to get in here with his 3:30 or 2:30 or 3 or.
Well, it's not 2:30. That's the dentist's favorite time of day. 2:30.
Oh, 2:30.
All right.
Okay.
Let's find a real comedian, please.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Thanks.
You. That was fun. Bye-bye.